Welcome, listeners, to SMQB's episode 203. This is Rooster, and the rest of the gang are joining us from a legal convention in Miami, where our third or fourth favorite guest on this show is also present, Mr. Moose from Toronto. We're going to have to go right to Moose for his segment of the show because he actually ventured over to Boca Raton and needs to get back to the festivities in Miami. And speaking of festivities in Miami, if you're watching us on YouTube, your eyes are not deceiving you. Toby House Milrod and Patrick Milk Michler are absolutely shit-faced. Pope, thank you for showing up sober.
So far.
All right.
Do you know how hard it is to drive from South Beach to Boca drunk? It's not easy.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to answer that question. On the advice of my counsel, please, I'm not answering that question.
Our listeners, they need to take an Uber or a Lyft.
Yes, please do.
This would be a great time not to mention our sponsors.
Drink responsibly.
All right, let's go right to Moose because he has to go and Uber back to South Beach. Milk.
I can't believe Miller's showing his face on this pod after that destruction. But go ahead, Miller. Go ahead.
All right. Moose is our resident NHL analyst, and he is here to explain to us ignorant Yanks what the Four Nations face-off is. I understand it's an international best-on-best. Looks to me more than just a glorified all-star game. What is it, Moose, and who's in it, and does it count toward anything?
Why does it matter?
Go ahead.
It matters because there's national pride for any country that's participating. And I got to tell you, this is no glorified all-star game compared to what used to be the Pro Bowl, the NBA all-star game. I mean, baseball is a good all-star game, but this is real hockey.
Sure I is. Mean, I mean, see some of these fights.
Well, forget, you know, put the fights aside because that was just a show that the Americans wanted to put on because they were being
Americans. What?
Yeah, it was the Tkachuk brothers and JT Miller that had planned this out, that they were going to face off and drop the gloves 9 seconds in. And I don't have a problem with that. Let me tell you, I don't have an issue with that. But but I'm putting the fighting aside because it's this just the competitiveness and the hitting that's going on. It's real hockey.
Sidney Crosby's playing the best hockey of his season so far.
He's had a good season.
He's played great.
I've never seen more Canadians get thrown up against the wall by the USA team the other night, by the way. Well, you're getting the shit kicked out of you. Okay. You know that, too.
Okay. Well, so let's clarify something with Milk here. Milk was with me in a restaurant, and there was no TV anywhere around. He didn't see
I've seen
any
the
of
highlights.
The game. He saw the highlights. And secondly, players do not get thrown
you
up.
You planned the dinner, by the way. That's your fault.
All right. Simmer down, Milk. Let him finish.
And the most important aspect of this, the comment that Milk said, I've never seen more Canadians thrown up against the wall. That shows his ignorance of the game of hockey. There are no walls that surround the ice. They are boards and glass.
That's okay. Boards, whatever.
So, you were getting the shit kicked out of you.
Hardly.
Tell us what countries are in this.
So we've got Finland, Sweden, United States, and Canada. Russia is still not permitted to play. Based upon the IHF rules, since they invaded the Ukraine, they've been banned from every international tournament. So it is not best on best right now because the Russians should be in it if there was not this ban. And it's unfortunate that they're not in it because it would make it more exciting. I mean, the Finns, they're a good team, but they're not the Russians. And they're probably the weakest of the four teams. And this is all about national pride. I think it's great. And then next year, they go to the Olympics. It's fantastic for hockey. It's the best way to grow the game of hockey by getting people from around the world to watch this real hockey, not the bullshit all-star stuff that the NHL used to have. So I'm super excited about it. And I think it was House that sent around a note the other day in our text chat about how America might have surpassed Canada in hockey. And I agreed.
Whoa!
And
hot sports opinion.
Whoa!
There.
A stunning revelation.
It's not stunning. You heard me say it the other night. But, you know, the talent that's coming out of the United States is incredible. Listen, if you had said to me 25 years ago, the Toronto Maple Leafs would have their best player and one of their top six forwards coming out of Phoenix, Arizona, I would have laughed at you. That's ridiculous.
So, Moose, to what do you attribute this? Because we don't have junior hockey like you do. We have high school and college hockey. What's going on?
Well, you've got the prep school hockey and you have the USHL. And I was telling Milk when he was not being so obnoxious with me about Americans and hockey that this all dates back to 1980. Because when the U.S. won that gold medal. Exactly. So out of that grew the Jeremy Roenicks and the Brontons and the Mullins and Mike Medanos and then the Kachucks. And now we're into like the second or second and a half generation of players that have come because the Miracle on Ice changed hockey in the United States. It just did. And it's great because before 1980, I don't even think there were a dozen players in the NHL. The AHL was 90-95% Canadian. There was a few Americans. The Russians hadn't come over yet. There were a few Swedes. But it goes back to 1980, and USA Hockey's done a great job. And the USHL has done a great job developing kids. And I think it's going to get even better now that the NCAA has gotten rid of their stupidity of if you play in the USHL or the OHL in Canada, you couldn't play NCAA hockey. Well, they've gotten rid of that. And so now you're going to really get some of the most amazing players coming out of junior hockey going to college in the United States, and the hockey's going to be incredible.
I have two questions about this tournament. One is, generally speaking, are the best players from these countries playing? And secondly, why is it already that the quote-unquote championship is USA versus Canada?
From my understanding, I don't know of any star player from any country that wouldn't play just because they wanted the rest. I think it's Quinn Hughes, couldn't play because of injury. But the Vancouver Canucks let him make that decision. So it is the best on best. There is a little bit of, I think it was obvious going into the tournament that Canada and the U.S. were the two best teams. The fact that Sweden lost twice in overtime now. And now Canada's beaten Finland today. So it's going to be Canada and the Americans going for the championship on Thursday night. And everyone wants that.
Over Canada, under on fights?
I don't think there will be fights in the final game. I just don't.
Where's the final going to be, Moose?
It's in Boston.
Oh, so we're going to boo the Canadian anthem then.
You can. And you know as well as I do that that's not anything to do with the American hockey players. That's about a certain politician that keeps talking about making Canada part of the United States, which is completely offensive. But that's a discussion for another day.
You will bend the knee, Moose, at some point.
But I will tell you, what will be interesting to see the game in Boston is how the Boston fans react to Brad Marchand if he starts ratting it up against the Americans. Because they have cheered this guy on for 15 years, and he's been effective. And, to hear him be cheered in Montreal like crazy the other night was really bizarre. So that's going to be a really interesting part of the game. I think it's going to be an incredibly physical game. I don't think there will be fighting, but I think it's going to be incredibly physical. And what I was going to say earlier is growing up, the rivalry in hockey from 72 through probably 1990 was Canada-Russia. And then the Americans started coming on. And now the rivalry in hockey is Canada-US. It just is.
Getting back to this tournament, what are your thoughts on this 10-minute overtime rule? I kind of like it.
Well, I like it because they want to get a winner. It's 3-on-3 hockey for 10 minutes. And I don't know the statistics on a 5-minute overtime, but many of the games do end before the 5 minutes. I think they're trying to do everything they can to avoid a shootout. I hate when any sport ends in a shootout. That's like having the NBA players do free throws. I think it's terrible. The 3-on-3 hockey is fantastic. With the skating ability these guys have, the playmaking. In the final game, though, it's a 20-minute 5-on-5. So it's regular hockey, 20 minutes, and then I think it goes to a shootout, which I hope there's not a shootout. It's the worst way to decide these things.
Any final thoughts on Four Nations?
I hope they keep doing this every 2 to 4 years, or do Four Nations Olympic, Four Nations Olympics. I think it's great for hockey. I think it's great for the hockey fans. And we'll see what happens Thursday night.
You see it be expanding from 4?
I don't think so. I think because of the time constraints and you need to get the season going again, I don't think they will go past 4 teams.
Yeah, the Golden Knights already lost a star player in this thing.
Yeah, that's part of it. That's the risk. Listen, when you put the jersey on for your country, every player says it's the most special thing. Listen, I hockey's always been what I grew up with. I don't think basketball players appreciated putting the jersey on for their country the same as hockey players did over the years. That's just my view, and that might be biased because I just grew up with hockey. Because a lot of NBA players didn't want to go to the Olympics. They wanted to rest. NHL players have never wanted to rest. They've always wanted to play in these tournaments from whatever country. So I think that there's just a little bit different when it comes to putting on that national jersey for your country.
All right, Moose, call your Uber. Thank you.
Good luck to Canada. You're going to need
it.
Go USA.
All right. At this point, I should say that tonight's
USA. USA.
Go Canada, baby. Tonight's show is brought to you by our good friends at Injury Board Milk, the number one plaintiffs law firm networking organization in the country.
Number one.
Milk, you have anything you want to say about this? Milk's the head of member recruitment.
I'm very honored to have all three of you members of Injury Board and
Moose.
And Moose, so that's much, right.
Not so honored, though, right?
Yeah.
It's a great privilege, and we hope all of our listeners will call Patrick to join.
Yes.
Check it out at injuryboard.org. Fantastic networking organization for both lawyers and vendors. And then also other sponsor for this show is Digital Law Marketing. The name says it all. They do marketing for law firms. And I can tell you as a customer, the difference between other marketing firms that I've used in the past is they want to get you on a meeting and talk to you about the number of visits to your site or clicks on your various social media platforms they've set up. Digital Law Marketing talks to you about the number of new clients they've created for you. And after all, that's what we're in it for. So they are results driven. And I can tell you as a customer that they deliver. If you're a law firm looking to replace your digital law marketing company, go to the number one name, Digital Law Marketing. All right, fellas, this is probably a dangerous segment right here. We're going to go to the bar and talk to whomever you want to chat up in the sports world at the bar. Hopefully House and Milk are having to know duels with this person right now. House, who do you want to take to the bar?
Well, I am going to be a homer in this segment because shocking. Parades are fun. The Eagles just celebrated their championship parade. There's always the hilarious stuff, but I think in a more kind of poignant part, the last speaker of the parade and someone who I've not really feted in a long time on this pod is Brandon Graham. And Brandon Graham is the longest playing Eagle in history. And by all accounts, the Super Bowl was his last game. He finished on top with two championships. And so I just want to take Brandon Graham to the bar and say, you finished on top, my man. Great job. And I don't think you'll ever pay for a drink in Philadelphia again, and you certainly won't be paying for one for this guy when I take you to the bar. Congrats, champion.
All right, and hopefully we won't have to say anything about the Eagles again until at least September.
Probably about 5 minutes, but go ahead.
All right. Milk, who you take to the bar?
I am taking someone you guys have never heard of, Josh Grizzard, not to be confused with Gristle. The gristle on a piece of steak. Josh Grizzard is the new offensive coordinator for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. 42 TDs, all right? Baker Mayfield. And I'm very interested to see how he's going to continue the offensive success that we've had the last couple of years.
Huge from.
If you're the offensive coordinator of the Bucs, that means you become a head coach the next year somewhere. So looking forward to it. He was with the Dolphins.
Okay.
And he's been with us the last couple of years.
How's his golf game?
Probably better than mine. Rooster?
It's not no, I was just asking for House since so everyone on your team's playing golf while his team is still playing. Pope, who are you taking to the bar?
I'm going international. I'm flying a jet over to Slovenia and going to Ljubljana to meet with our tour guide from when we were in Slovenia and talk to him about the continuing saga that is Luka to the Lakers. Blaz is this guy's name, and he was great, and He loved the Mavericks. He showed us when we were there, ironically, the restaurant and the table where Luka and Cuban signed their deal when Luka re-signed. So it's going to be interesting seeing what he has to say about how Slovenia is reacting to the news that their favorite son is now a Laker.
All right. I am going to take to the bar the manager of the Yankees, Aaron Boone. And we've got spring training coming up on him. And I'm going to try to impress upon him that he's being paid to do more than devour sunflower seeds and yell at umpires. Hopefully he can focus a little bit on fundamental baseball this spring and maybe, you know, get pitchers to hustle over to first base on a ball hit to the right side of the infield, teach people how to run the bases, and stop bitching to the press that he's looking for a leadoff hitter. How about you take Jazz Chisholm and teach him how to bunt and steal bases? That might make a little bit of sense. The guy could be the next Ricky Henderson with a little bit of fundamentals. But anyway, I digress. I wish we would have gotten a new manager. We didn't. We extended him. So now I expect him to do his job.
He does have the best name in baseball, though, Jazz Chisholm.
I know. It's really hard. It's really hard not to mix really up the
Rooster.
I could keep wanting to call him Jazz.
I know this is for the Nay segment. I don't know why he's avoiding us tonight, but since you mentioned baseball, did you guys hear the thing about Manfred and his comments on the Dodgers?
No.
Well, basically, he's responding to criticism that he thinks that what the Dodgers are doing is good for baseball. I mean, I don't even understand from a commissioner standpoint. In what world does someone think that that is good for the game of baseball? Sorry, I know it's not really on our topic. Maybe I'll say that for a punch because that really bothered me.
Oh, I'm happy to talk on it.
Yeah. No, it's really right up Milk's alley. Since you root for the Phillies, I root for the Yankees. We really can't complain about
how
much a team spends on there.
This guy's got a $300 million dollar
payable. Right. Yes.
Okay, but that's what they've really done is cornered the Japanese market to the point where it's almost a monopoly.
That's right. Cornered everything. I don't know how that's good for the game of baseball, but anyway, I digress.
It's not.
Let's move on to the NBA. Raise your hand if you watched anything to do with the All-Star game weekend. I haven't.
Only the Mac McClung.
I saw highlights of the dunk.
Other
contest.
Than the Mac McClung highlights, I've seen nothing.
I didn't see anybody else.
Man, those were some highlights, though, huh? I mean, I think he might have taken the title as all-time best dunker in this event. I mean, better than Dominique. I'm talking about better than Jordan and better than Vince
Spud Webb
Carter. I mean, those are
I don't know.
Those are some creative dunks.
Insanity. It's saying a lot.
Very amazing.
It was amazing. But that's the last thing anybody wants to hear about this weekend. I do want to, at the break, though, talk about some odd things that I see in basketball. My first topic is bad teams that should be good, that teams we expected to be good. There are two that really jump off the page at me. I'm going to start out talking about the Suns and then kick it over to you, House, to talk about the Sixers. The Phoenix Suns in 2018 had the number one pick in the draft. They drafted DeAndre Ayton, center. He proceeds to become first team all rookie. He helps them to get to the finals for the first time since 1993. In 2021, he's the fastest Phoenix Sun to reach 1,000 rebounds. And they let him walk in 2003. They won't extend his contract, mostly because the coach at the time seemed to have an issue with him. Well, that coach signed a gigantic deal, left the Suns for the Pistons, and the Pistons had to get rid of him. He was so bad. So then that year, 2023, they also decide, well, they got a new owner. This is ultimately the problem. They get this new owner, Matt Ishbia, who has ants in his pants. You know, he's like a new owner in the candy store and just can't be patient. So he's got Devin Booker, gets rid of, or lets walk Ayton, and goes out and wants to build a big three. So he trades four unprotected first-round picks, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, Jay Crowder, for KD, who's getting old, getting long in the tooth, and then trades another four picks and Chris Paul for Bradley Beal, who everybody in the league knew is a problem, right? So now he's got KD, Bradley Beal, and Devin Booker, and all he's done is a disservice to Devin Booker, who is never going to win a championship in his stellar career as long as he's with the Suns. And now they have no center and they're trying to unload Bradley Beal. No one really wants him, and the teams that are dumb enough to take him, he won't go to because he has no trade clause.
They might have tried to unload KD, too.
They tried to unload KD. They made it known they would trade him.
Right.
The Suns are in a shambles, and they were, you know, back in the early 2020s, looking like a contender, an annual contender. The Sixers, we all thought, should be good this year. What the hell happened, House? I told you when they went and got Paul George that he was one knee injury away from being a disappointment to all of you.
Well, it's worse than a disappointment. And I think that your comments about the Suns equally apply to the Sixers and the status of the NBA. We used to talk on this pod about how getting a big three mattered to winning an NBA championship. I mean, that's an important thing if you can get it. I think chemistry is everything in the NBA these days. These guys are very, very hard to coach. They're not college players anymore. A lot of them are divas. You know, yes, some teams, their benches matter more than others, but it's five guys who you got to get gelling together. I think Tibbs is doing a great job with the Knicks. I think Cleveland's doing a great job with the Cavs.
I think Tibbs would tell you it's seven guys you have to get gelling together.
Yes. But I think the Sixers have horrendous chemistry. And I think Paul George is a shell of himself. I think it was general managerial malpractice what Daryl Morey did to sign him. If you can believe this, and I've been on record on this pod that I escorted Tobias Harris out of town. If you can believe this, Paul George is worse than Tobias Harris.
He has a bad attitude.
He just, you know, when Embiid's not playing and there's all these, you know, rest nights and stuff like that, when Embiid's not, you know, whatever load management, the fact that Paul George can't regularly score 15 to 20 points with 7 or 8 rebounds is obscene. And unfortunately, what it's also doing is it's putting so much weight on Tyrese Maxey that now he's getting criticism because he's not scoring 30 points every single night. Who could possibly do that? I think the Sixers are in real trouble. I do think the process was a good idea. I do think I will never criticize NBA teams for tanking to get the best player if someone is available, like a Joel Embiid or a Victor Wembanyama, but the process is over.
I think you've had some bad luck in the process, and that just happens. You've been snake bitten by some of these number one picks.
We have. But I'll tell you, in the NBA, I think the most remarkable story for me right now is the turnaround that has occurred with the Memphis Grizzlies. They were horrendous last year. Obviously, Ja had to miss most of the season, but they had a lot of offseason movement. And I think they're either second or third in the West.
Second.
And second, right, Pope? Yeah.
They're 8 back from OKC, but yeah, they're second.
Okay. I mean, 8 back is a lot, but they're playing great basketball. Yep. And, you know, the Memphis Grizzlies, to me, are as surprising in their success as the Sixers are in their failure this year. So I don't know. I do think obviously OKC is the team to beat. I think with Denver, I think Jokic, you can never count him out. I think with the Lakers have assembled, but I think in the West, Memphis is going to be a very, very interesting thing to watch in the postseason. As much as I am impressed with what the Cavs have done, I think everything runs through Boston. I know the Cavs are so impressive. I think Boston wipes the floor with them in the playoffs. So
yeah, I'll tell you who I'm impressed with this year is the Pistons. Yeah. You know, the perennial bad team, even with a stockpile of great draft picks. And this year, Cade Cunningham has broken out and is a superstar.
Big time.
Scoring 25 a game. And he's getting great support from Ajur Thompson, who was a great draft pick. I think Tobias Harris had a little bit of a renaissance getting out of Philadelphia. And same with Hardaway. And then Jalen Duren is playing well. They're 29-26. They're the 6th seed in the East, as opposed to Philly, which is the 11th seed. And I think Orlando has turned it around, too. If they hadn't had a long spell of Banchero being out with injuries, they'd have a winning record. They're 27-29 right now, and they're the 7th seed. They're a good team. They got Banchero. They've got Franz Wagner, Suggs, and McClung. That's a damn good core four guys right there.
I don't know about McClung, but I definitely think that Wagner and Suggs and Banchero, when we did our NBA preview, that was kind of my sneak. Like, I thought that they might surprise in the East. I still think they might if they get healthy, because Franz Wagner is one of the most underrated players in all the NBA. He's an absolute deadly shooter. So,
and
the
Rockets are coming down to earth. They're starting to lose some games because they have a tough schedule recently. But give them another year.
They're going to keep slipping.
Yeah, this year. But give them another year under their coach, who's an awesome coach, in my opinion, Ime Udoka. They're going to be good next year.
You know, obviously the Celtics from the East won it last year. And, you know, you could argue that they're favored potentially to come out of the East and you know, it would be a possible repeat. But the Western Conference just continues to assert a domination. I mean, I'm looking at the stats, right, guys? The Golden State, they're tied with Sacramento for the 9-10, and they're both one game over 500. And you look in the East, and the Bulls are 11 games under 500, and they're holding on to the 10th slot in the East. So obviously the West is looking stronger. And from my perspective, without talking about the Mavericks too much, because we don't know what's going to happen with AD and with Lively, is he going to come back and be strong or not? There's really not a team in the West that would scare another team playing in a 7-game series. Yeah, Oklahoma City has run away with it. They're 8 games up. They're going to clearly be the number one seed in home court all throughout. But you've got teams like the Lakers that are at the 5 seed. Mavericks are at 8. I think even the Nuggets at 3. I think any of those teams could come out of the West. I'm not so sure about the East. You look at Cleveland and Boston, and then the rest of it is not as strong.
I don't know if I agree with that. Go ahead, Milk.
Where do you guys see Golden State going in the second half of this season?
I think Golden State
after Butler's arrival.
Yeah, of all of the like play-in level teams, to me, Golden State's the one that could actually be a contender if Steph can play consistently well for 4 or 5 games in a row and Jimmy Butler takes off. I don't think Dallas is going anywhere this year because I think AD is hurt worse than we hear and isn't coming back anytime soon. And I do think that Cleveland and the Knicks would gladly play any team in the West other than OKC and take care of them. And, of course, the Celtics would, too.
That's pretty strong, saying the Knicks would take care of any team in the West other than OKC.
Now, the problem with OKC, in my opinion, is even though they have a tremendous superstar, they don't have a money killer guy who, if you need one shot at the end of a period, you know he's going to hit it.
I mean, I would argue SGA's the guy.
I think he could be the guy. I think he could be the guy, but he's a superstar for sure.
And you realize Chet Holmgren is just now coming back.
Yeah. He's not that guy yet, though, either. Yeah,
no, they're going to get better. But, I mean, they've done all of this without arguably their number two best player.
Hartenstein is the key to that team, I believe. He is the heart and soul of that team. Tough. He's just tough. We miss him. All right. Hope, I don't mean to keep bringing this up, but God, what the hell is going on? Dallas just can't leave it alone. They want to rub salt in their own wounds. Everybody's around NBA saying it's the most incompetent trade in the history of the league. And so they compound the problem by being tone deaf to their own fans, by throwing people out who are holding up signs saying fire the GM. How stupid is that? The only person dumb enough to do shit like that so far has been James Dolan for the Knicks. And now Dallas is saying, hold my beer, Dolan.
Adelson. Yeah.
And then they're immature and ugly about the thing because their feelings are hurt. Now they're releasing all this nasty shit about Luka, who has been nothing but above board since they traded him. You're right. I mean, that the ownership is awful. And I actually think Mark Cuban needs to stop crying like a baby about this too, because he knew who he was selling that team to and gladly took their money. Now he needs to just shut up and get out of the way. Are you raising your hand, House?
Well, because I have a question for Pope. Who is the person that sent around the conspiracy theory thing about moving to Vegas? Was that you, Pope?
No, that's not part of what's happening here. It's not.
No? Well, that's Dallas, what I want to ask you.
No, Dallas is, and Adam Silver came out and said it over the All-Star weekend. Dumont, even little Doughboy, has been very consistent with this is not a play to go back to Vegas. They could get an expansion team, but Dallas is the fourth biggest market in the NBA. They're not going to lose a team.
Wait, Pope, just pause and rewind for our listeners what the conspiracy theory is that people have kicked around in the dark web.
I mean,
as it,
I, I think essentially the conspiracy theory is to make the Mavericks look so bad and do so many things to upset the fans and piss off the love affair they have with them, such that they basically are, you know, they're not renewing their season tickets. They hate the Mavericks. And then, you know, Adelson will be like, oh, well, if you don't want us, we'll just go to Vegas. And you would say that starts with getting rid of Luka, who is the fabric, you know, of the city love affair with the Mavericks was Luka.
You think there's no chance of this happening, though?
No chance.
Okay. Well, if there was, the fans have sort of thrown a monkey wrench in that and have gotten behind this team.
I mean, look.
And Kyrie.
Yeah, not all of them, but yes. I mean, look, we like to support our basketball team, and it hurts. It sucks. Probably won't ever get over it. Even if they won a championship, it would still feel kind of wrong or tainted. But ultimately, the team, if they win, now, look, the caveat was if they lose and they lose bad, then, you know, it could really go south. But that all being said, there is not going to be a movement of the Mavericks from Dallas to Vegas. Just not going to happen. But I was going to say one other thing since we're talking about this now. There's a New York Times article that's fascinating today on Nico Harrison, just talking about his makeup, how he was, you know, at Nike, all these guys called themselves SEALs because they were like real rigid and fitness and health and all this kind of stuff. And Nico basically lost faith with Luka because he wouldn't toe the line on doing things that Nico wanted him to do to stay in shape. And so the Times article basically said that the Mavericks were never going to offer the Supermax deal this summer to Luka. And since they were never going to offer it to him, they offloaded him and tried to get what they could for him.
No, they didn't. They tried to get one thing for him, AD.
I understand. They tried, in Nico's mind, he got what he could without making the trade public, in which case it would have been torpedoed by the fans' backlash. That's why it was all done in secrecy. I mean, Nico literally decided he was going to make this move without consulting anybody, and that was, according to the New York Times, that's consistent with kind of the way he was. You know, remember, Rob Pelinka was Kobe's agent. And so Nico, as an executive of Nike, Rob Pelinka and Kobe used to be tight. The three of them used to travel the world together. They did all kinds of events. And so that's why Pelinka was the guy that Nico went to, and they cut this deal in the darkness.
All right. That's also enough Dallas Mavericks until September. I'm going to introduce a quick new segment for our fans who interact with us on social media and through our mailbag, which is smqbsmailbag@gmail.com, and introduce a little SMQB's trivia. The trivia question for this episode is, if you're a longtime listener, you'll know this. Who is Pope's dad's favorite college football team?
I got this.
I know you've got it. This is for the fans. We look forward to hearing from you. All right. Who's got a punchable face of the week? There's a punch alert out for Justin Tucker. 16 total women are accusing him of behavior worse than what Deshaun Watson did with his massage therapist. So we will see. We're not gonna jump to any conclusions yet. It's looking bad though for old Justin.
What's going on with that massage?
Pope, that's a conflict. That's a conflict. You're trying to hide the truth there.
We're gonna move on to my milk slap.
All right, do it.
And I just want to go back to say that pitchers and catchers are showing up soon. So we're on to baseball talk, which our favorite politician Bison is going to be excited to talk about soon. But I just want to finish what I was saying before about this Rob Manfred thing. And I guess I can't say it from a Philly standpoint. Yes, I guess we have the third or fourth biggest payroll in baseball, but I don't know that I don't even know what the Dodgers payroll is, but whatever it is. And as Rooster says, like, they've cornered the market on the Japanese. Every insanely great player from Mookie Betts to whatever is automatically a Dodger. And if the Dodgers win again this year, baseball is going to compound the problems that they already have right now in getting people's interest in baseball. You know, teams like the Milwaukee Brewers or the Kansas City Royals or smaller market teams, even, look, I know it's not the smallest market, as Pope just pointed out, you know, Dallas is whatever, but even the Texas Rangers a couple of years ago was a better story than the LA Dodgers. I just say, as a commissioner of baseball, I know you've got to protect the owners. I know that's who you work for. But here's a milk slap to Rob Manfred for saying that what is happening right now for the Dodgers is good for baseball. Because no one's going to turn on the TV set more because you just said that. Just less. That's right. My milk slap. Good
By one. The way, if the Phillies had won the World Series last year, he would be lassoing that guy.
Well, we'll get to
just so you know.
We'll get to lasso.
Yeah, okay.
Does anybody have a lasso?
I do.
Oh, thank God. Go for it.
I just want to say, Rooster, this is a homer thing, but Rooster was right all along about the legend that is Saquon Barkley. Now, I just want to say this one cool thing, because I do think this was a lasso moment. Saquon Barkley is in the middle of the parade, and there's swarms of people, like a million people. And as they're going along, Saquon Barkley, like probably one of the most popular athletes in the world, and certainly one of the most popular athletes in all of the NFL, recognizes behind the ropes in the throngs of the crowd, the Eagles frigging ball boy, one of the ball boys on the side. And I don't know if you've seen this, but Saquon Barkley comes over from the buses, lifts up the rope, grabs the ball boy and says, well, wait a second, kid, you're part of the team. You're riding in the parade with us. Who does those kinds of things? Like, that was just unbelievable. And then I think it was Pope last week who gave a lasso to one of the survivors from the New Orleans.
Tiger and Jack Besh's story.
That was my lasso.
Oh, that was your. Well, anyway, you know, Saquon comes up on stage and has his chance to do whoever it was. Great job. But Saquon brought them up on stage with him. Like, again, the guy's so gracious. The moment is never about him. It's about the ball boy. It's about a terrorist victim in the middle of the Eagles parade. While all the other Eagles are understandably getting wasted, Saquon is like recognizing people who should be like celebrated as ordinary people. I think that's what the last is all about. This one's for you, Saquon.
If the Giants GM had half the class of Saquon Barkley, Saquon would still be on the Giants.
That's true. I've got a follow-up lasso to that, by the way, because it has to do with the parade. This guy, it could be a girl, I don't know, it's anonymous, is not getting enough credit. But somebody during that parade successfully hit Howie Roseman in the head with a beer can. And that person needs to be lassoed. Take down Howie. It was great.
That's for those of you watching on YouTube, Howie bleeds for the Eagles, and he's our screensaver because Milk really wanted to have the Eagles behind him for this.
Yeah, it was nice of you, Milk.
One in a million.
All right. Let's move on to the buzzer beater section of the show. Who's got a buzzer beater?
Mine follows up last week because we had the Iron Basket Bowl on Saturday, and Auburn came to Tuscaloosa and took out of Alabama. And so Auburn is number one. Milk, thought you might want to chime in on this. Who's the number two team?
I was. You took mine.
Go
Gators.
Go. Two. There's your segue.
Alabama-Florida collision course, couple weeks.
How long has it been since Florida's been up there like that, Milk?
Over 10 years.
There are guys about to retire from the NBA who were on that team.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good team. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, unlike football, the SEC is definitely dominant this year in college basketball.
It is. That's got to annoy people.
My buzzer beater is a simple hot take, and it is this. I think we need to eliminate all-star games from all sports. Certainly the competition itself. Even in baseball, they've gotten so ridiculously, sublimely dumb. The NBA, the NHL, the flag football NFL, and yes, even Major League Baseball, they're stupid. Give us a break from it. Give the players a break. And I'm not making it a punch, but the NBA thing is just dumb. Yeah, okay, I like a dunk contest. And yeah, I like a home run derby. You want to have those? Have those at a break. But the actual competition is a farce, an insult to the fans. It's actually competitive. Nobody wants to watch it. And so my proposal, which I hope will be adopted by all the SMQBs, is to eliminate all of the major sports all-star games. They're dumb.
So, House, a couple of years ago, we had this conversation, and you said your kids actually enjoyed the all-star game. So let's
They like the weekend. Hope they like the weekend that's not the game. They like the skills competition. They like the dunk competition, the three-point competition. And some of those are fun. I think the game itself is stupid. And I think
the game
wasn't even a game, was there? It was like a scrimmage with Kenny and Shaq and
they had a game. They had first to 40.
And Barkley, they selected teams and they played each other like some kind of round. I don't even know what the game was.
They had games that were first to 40 tournament, and nobody watched it. I'd like to see them replace the games with prospects. You know, like in Major League Baseball, each team picks their number one and two prospect and puts that on the team and has an all-star prospect game, and or old-timers. I mean, who wouldn't like to see your favorite player from 10, 15 years ago out there just having a good time? But I agree with you, House. What's being put out there for consumption now in the name of an all-star game is unwatchable. Unwatchable. House has had to excuse himself for a minute.
He brought a jersey to Miami. Can you see it? It's an Eagles jersey.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Is that a Hurts jersey?
Oh my God. Yeah. He brought Eagles jersey to Miami.
All right, that's probably the end of the show.
That's enough of that, House.
That's unbelievable.
All right, I've got a buzzer, and then we'll sign off. Paige Becker, the superstar player for UConn women's basketball, is officially back from her terrible injuries. I think that if she hadn't had these bad injuries, she would have been the number one pick last year ahead of Caitlin Clark. She's that good. UConn played number four ranked University of South Carolina last night, which, you know, they've been in the finals for, what, 2-3 years in a row. UConn was the eighth ranked team. UConn won 87-50 behind Paige Becker's performance. She's going to be the number one pick in the WNBA this year, and I predict she will be better than Caitlin Clark.
Whoa. That's a hot take, too.
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Anything else, fellas?
No, it's we're on to baseball season soon.
Spring training
start
Thursday.
And our politician Bison will be back soon to talk about it.
Raise Yankees on Friday. I'll see you there, Rooster.
All right. Sounds good.
Have a good week, everybody.
Go Birds.